The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from KHUH LP 104.9 FM Seattle, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Hello, people, and welcome to the Thunderbolt for September 4th, 2020. And yes, I have finally received one too many complaints about referring to listeners as kids, as evidently a lot of people out there consider that to be condescending. Now, I know what I mean when I say that, but evidently a lot of other people take a different interpretation, and so I will accede to the common wisdom here and start referring to listeners as people rather than as kids. So hey, people, as most Washingtonians know, the Oregon coast is a popular tourist destination. Oregon's rough, rocky, mountainous shoreline presents one scenic wonder after another, all combined with the awesome power of the sea smashing onto rocks and cliffs. And another feature that once graced the Oregon coast was an exploding whale. And now, Oregon's newest state park celebrates that storied event with the opening of the Exploding Whale State Park in Florence. Officials announced the park's new name in May at the 113th Annual Florence Rhododendron Festival, which has a special theme this year, a blast from the past. For you see, in the fall of 1970, a large dead whale was found on the beach in Florence. According to the Oregon Historical Society, the dead decaying sperm whale posed a serious health hazard and it needed to be disposed of. But locals decided that it was too big to drag away or to bury. Thus, officials came up with the idea that provides a classic case of why people feel about politicians the way they usually do. The officials decided to get rid of the dead whale by blowing it up with dynamite. The idea was to blast the stinking carcass into manageable bite-sized chunks that scavenging birds and crabs could then clean up. And so, a large crowd gathered to watch officials blow up the whale. Within seconds of the explosion, all of them found themselves dodging huge chunks of dead whale that rained down over a quarter mile from the blast site. And all of the spectators and all of the surrounding area and even parts of the town itself became drenched in whale gore. According to Live Science, spectators fled in all directions, escaping the awful smell and the rain of rotting whale flesh. One particularly hefty slab landed on an unaccompanied car about a quarter mile from the blast site, crushing the roof, and everyone nearby was drenched with dead whale. And after all of that, their plan did not even work. After the explosion, much of the whale's body was still in big chunks that were much too large for small scavengers to carry away, and thus, the demolition crew ended up burying the remaining pieces of the carcass on the beach anyway. At least you can say that Oregon has learned from its mistake. Current policy in the state of Oregon specifically prohibits blowing up dead whales.
Mr. Georgie Thornton received a call one early morn. They found a rotting sperm whale beached on the seaside town of Florence. It was long as a bus and 8 short tons of blubber in decay. And Georgie Thornton scratched his head, boy, how do we haul it away? How do we haul it away? He called the district engineer, a feller named Al Allen. But Dal had gone out hunting bucks, so Georgie took the helm. The protocol was simple enough, just bury the carcass in sand. But what do you tell the tourists when they come to the hump in the land? Come to the hump in the land. And as the seagulls circled high and the crowd gathered in wait, Georgie cried, of course, why not? The whale will detonate. We'll use the quarry's dynamite, and so it arrived post-haste. In spite of the warnings that it was too much, he strapped on 20 a case. We'll blow her to heaven's gate. We counted down and covered our ears, and then we turned to George. He hit the switch with a flick of his wrist in the stillness of the morn. The explosion threw the whale flesh well over 800 feet away. The blubber rained down upon the town in chunks of white and gray. Chunks of white and gray. It covered the town and the old schoolhouse with bits of skin and grizzle. It covered the church where we go to pray with blubber all over the steeple. It covered the diner and the laundromat with bits of blood and bone. It covered the old Ben Franklin with a wash of rancid foam. A wash of rancid foam. It covered the sun as sand and dust then settled down over the town. It crushed a brand new Oldsmobile that was painted silver and brown. Soon the town was buzzing with the Portland Evening News. Georgie Thornton backed away with blubber on his shoes. Blubber all over his shoes. He stood his ground with the register guard. He stood his ground so well. He blamed the TV and the newsmen for blowing it all to hell. He said it went just exactly right, and he seemed so sure of himself. They promoted Georgie to the Medford office, and we bid him fare thee well. We bid him fare thee well. Now a reeking memory lingers on our little town of Florence as we reflect upon the whale and good old Georgie Thornton. When in our shock we stood amidst the rubble and debris, now at least we know what not to do when a whale washes up from the sea.
Donald Trump is so bad in so many ways that it's probably impossible to even list all of the badness that is resulting from his idiocy's reign in the White House. Fortunately, though, Donald Trump is very bad at being bad. And the fact he is so bad at being bad is good. Because he is so bad that if he were good at being bad, then that would be a level of exponential badness that would be even more incomprehensible than this sentence is. And so, this thunderbolt is called baboons with chainsaws. And no, that is not a new metaphor that I have made up to describe the Donald Trump administration. Though it would be completely appropriate for that use, and I now wish that I had thought of it. Anyway, regular listeners may remember that I recently aired a major thunderbolt mentioning some of the upsides that would accrue were humanity to begin devolving back to our ape origins. Well, it turns out that perhaps the apes are getting ready to replace us should we decide to do that. It turns out, in fact, that Seattle and Portland are not the only locales where vandals and thieves are marauding unchecked. It turns out, in fact, that there is a gang of miscreant primates in the Knowlesley Safari Park. That's Knowsley, who have taken to vandalizing and stealing things from parked cars and then terrorizing parked visitors with various weapons, ranging from knives and screwdrivers to, yes, even a frigging baboon who is reportedly armed with a frigging chainsaw. Just when you thought that it was safe to go outside again. Fortunately, the baboon did not know he had to prime the carburetor, and thus he could not get the chainsaw started. Wait till they get their hands on a bazooka, though. Who knew that the planet of the apes was prophetic, lending more credibility to the accuracy of these reports is the fact that in spite of numerous eyewitness accounts and numerous photographs of armed simians, the Knowlesley Safari Park officials keep insisting that armed apes are an urban myth. Right. there is a move afoot to designate Black Lives Matter as a terrorist organization. Now that news probably seriously freaks out a lot of people. But I would note that what this means is that BLM is seriously shaking a lot of people's trees. Now, I think it is unlikely that they will be able to get away with that, but we are in uncharted territory these days. So who knows? Should Black Lives Matter actually be designated as a terrorist organization, then the federal government would be free to use their fusion centers to collect all of their endless data on everyone and then inform the Joint Terrorism Task Force upon who the BLM leaders are so that they can subsequently blackmail or discredit or arrest or murder them. Evidently, there is an online petition where if you can garner over 100,000 signatures, then the White House is obliged to respond in public to that petition. The petition to designate Black Lives Matter as a terrorist organization evidently garnered over 141,000 signatures, thus obliging the White House to respond. The Rumps people responded that the White House, quote, plays no role in designating domestic terrorist organizations, unquote, which is a frigging lie. And then they stated that the government doesn't even keep lists of domestic terrorist organizations, which is another frigging lie. Finally, they said, quote, therefore, we are not able to address the formal request of your petition, unquote. So the Rumps people dodged a bullet without suffering undue political damage. But they had to lie through their teeth in order to do it. And besides that, I don't think they could get away with it now anyway, because too many people have been woken up. And unlike our previous racial battles in the United States, this time, a lot of white people have woken up. The brutal injustice and the systemic nature of the racism is becoming all too obvious to all too many people. And I don't think they can keep a lid on it anymore. And if we can dismantle the racism machine, then that is one of the three pillars that hold up the entire imperialism machine. We are making some serious progress here, people. Let's keep it going. Whatever progress we are making these days is not thanks to the Democratic Party. Quite the opposite, in fact. So I attended the last Zoom meeting of the local Democratic Party before the primary, when the question of whether or not to endorse Joe Biden came up, though. to my horror, I realized that no one else was going to speak out against that motion. And this was even though I knew there were several people there who loathe Joe Biden as much as I do. Well, maybe not quite as much. They really don't like him. And therefore, once again, it fell to me to state the facts that almost no one there wanted to hear. I.e. that Joe Biden is a lying, corrupt, reactionary war criminal and child killer. And that I would rather lick one of those little colored things that they leave in public urinals than vote for Joe freaking Biden. For anything more influential than a freaking dog catcher. Now, I didn't quite put it that harshly at the meeting. And in fact, for me, I was quite diplomatic. I probably did not make any friends, and no one else spoke out against endorsing Joe Biden. Three people spoke in favor of endorsing Joe Biden, and all of their arguments invariably consisted of some variation on the theme that Donald Trump is so evil. That is true. That fact, though, does not mitigate in any way the fact that Joe Biden is a lying, corrupt, reactionary war criminal and child killer. So far, the only campaign strategy seems to be that Joe Biden is not Donald Trump. Evidently, the Democrats want to saddle us with yet another lying, corrupt, reactionary war criminal and child killer so they can keep doing the same thing the Democrats have been doing for the last 40 years. Evidently, because those strategies have produced such awesome results. One of those results being the fact that we now have a freaking clueless clown as president. Anyway, the local Democrats voted 57-2 to officially endorse a lying, corrupt, reactionary warmonger and child killer for President of the United States. Since there were around 80 eligible voters present, this means that around 20 of them didn't vote at all. Probably meaning that they didn't want to vote for Biden, but they also didn't want to be on the record voting against Biden. Probably because voting against Biden would likely kill any chance they would have of ever advancing within the Democratic Party in the future. Victor Menjarez, a corporate Dem who chaired the meeting more like an autocratic dictator than as an impartial adjudicator, was especially insistent that a screenshot be taken of the vote on the proposal to endorse Joe Biden. So I am probably officially on the Democratic Party shite list now. Well, if so, I am proud of that achievement as well. For I am now on the record voting against endorsing a lying, corrupt, reactionary war criminal and child killer for president of the United States. That act will probably represent the high point of my political career. Several people have contacted me and thanked me since, praising my courage for speaking truth to power. The mere fact that it takes courage to speak truth to power in and of itself delineates one of our central problems. If anyone who voted at that meeting to endorse Joe Biden happens to be listening to this week's Thunderbolt, I have a serious question for you, and I would really like an answer. When I refer to Joe Biden as a lying, corrupt, reactionary war criminal and child killer, do you disbelieve me? Or are you really willing to accept that? It's time for a quick station break now. The Thunderbolt will be back in just a minute. The views expressed on the Thunderbolt are my views, and no one else's. Those views do not necessarily reflect the views of KHUH-FM, nor anyone that has anything to do with KHUH-FM. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. Any successful revolution or political movement requires public support. To paraphrase Bill Moyer of the Backbone Campaign, you want grandma to be bringing you cookies. You don't want her cowering at home in fear. We want the general public to like us, or at least to feel sympathy, rather than antipathy. Now, whenever you take over the streets, you inconvenience motorists. Those motorists are the people that you want on your side. Annoying them seems counterproductive to recruiting them to your cause. And so when I used to participate in protest marches down Capitol Way, I would carry a bullhorn. And I would apologize to the motorists who were stuck in the traffic, explaining that since we couldn't afford to buy any influence with our legislators, that this was the only method we could use to have our voices heard. Most of the motorists with whom I interacted conveyed expressions of sympathy rather than antipathy. Mission accomplished. Thugs and bullies, on the other hand, are thugs and bullies, and nobody likes thugs and bullies. Trying to win people over by scaring them into compliance has highly limited utility. Intimidating, threatening, or physically beating people up, and especially killing anyone, over politics. That is exactly the kind of politics that we need to reject, do away with, eliminate, eradicate, purge, make archaic, render completely obsolete, and utterly unacceptable. Well, there are factions within Antifa who are regularly using violence and threats of violence against anyone that says or does anything they don't like, including journalists. Boo. That means that Antifa are being thugs and bullies. And that means that they suck and that no one likes them. And that means that I don't like them. They also suck because I can't think of any better way to defuse our movement and lose vital public support than by becoming associated with left-wing versions of the frigging brown shirts, inconveniencing and intimidating members of the general public is not an effective method of making friends and influencing people. In any positive sense, anyway. And so I really wish that the rogue actors who are working within the Antifa structures would stop trashing locally owned businesses and stop harassing innocent motorists and especially stop threatening and attacking journalists. Those are the acts of thugs and bullies. Now, while I am mostly an aggregator and a commentator, I do occasionally commit actual acts of journalism. And a few weeks ago, for the first time in my commentator journalist career, I literally stumbled over a story. That is, if you don't count the time that I saw a chicken crossing a road and I conducted an in-depth investigation into why it had done so. Anyway, I was walking east on Fifth Avenue on a recent Sunday afternoon, and as I approached Cherry Street, I saw about a dozen cops all decked out in their riot gear come out of the back of the police station and turn the corner north onto Cherry Street. And when I reached Cherry Street myself, I saw that the police had surrounded someone who was lying motionless in the middle of the street, surrounded by demonstrators. So it turned out that this was because Black Lives Matter and Antifa protesters had been out in front of City Hall blocking the traffic on 4th Avenue when a bunch of armed right-wing vigilantes who call themselves American Wolf showed up and took it upon themselves to reopen the traffic flow. The members of American Wolf began physically removing protesters who were blocking the street. Now, American Wolf were obviously thugs and bullies who were crashing someone else's party looking for trouble. And since, as I mentioned, there are factions within Antifa who are also thugs and bullies, then American Wolf got what they were looking for. And the predictable asshole on asshole violence erupted. And the gentleman I saw lying in the street was an American Wolf who had been knocked unconscious by a blow to the head, reportedly administered by some sort of pipe or baton or something. The man was bleeding profusely. A Black Lives Matter protester, who seemed to know what she was doing, was administering first aid. American Wolf felt that since the police weren't enforcing the laws, then it fell upon them to enforce those laws. Even though they themselves were breaking other laws in doing so, specifically the Washington Revised Code 38-40-120 concerning authorized military and law enforcement organizations. But enforcing the law by breaking the law is typical right-wing logic. So I'm no longer surprised by such hypocrisies. Now, American Wolf is headed by a gentleman named Peter Diaz. And on his website, and throughout an interview I listened to, he states he is not against protesters. He's against criminal elements within the ranks of the protesters. Yet at one point during the interview, he Freudian slipped and said that he was battling protesters. I mean, criminals. Yeah, right. So Mr. Diaz has been labeled as a vigilante by Olympia City Council member Danny Madrone, for whatever that's worth. And Mr. Diaz is also a member of the Three Percenters, another nutcase right-wing vigilante group who recently caused controversy when a member of the Olympia Police Department posed for a photo with them. The second paragraph of the Three Percenter website says this, quote, "First and foremost, we are not racist, nor are we white supremacists." Well, when that is the first and foremost thing you need to say about yourself, then I would consider that fact alone as evidence that actually you probably are racist and white supremacist. But whatever. That is beside the point. These people suck, and everyone with half a brain knows that these people suck, but I am thinking that wolves disguised in anti-fascist clothing may well pose an even greater threat, since they endanger our public credibility and endanger our public sympathy. And so it well may be our side that we really need to keep an eye on, lest they screw up everything we've been working for all these years. We don't fight them by becoming them. We fight them by becoming the anti-them. Meaning that it's time to get to work now.
You know, a lot of these shows kind of melt together after all these years, and I hadn't remembered how strong that particular show had been. And speaking of reruns, you're going to be hearing a lot of them over the next few months, as I just purchased a school bus, and I'm going to convert that school bus into my retirement home, and that is going to be taking nearly all of my time and energy for the next while. Exactly how long I can't say, as I've never done anything like this before. After that, though, I will have a safe, warm space in which to produce thunderbolts that is not dependent upon coming up with $1,000 every month. Yippee. So I'm going to play some music to finish out the hour. This is Olympia local Kimya Dawson.
Misfits could all gather and feel safe. He was a cynic, a supporter. He was crazy, he was queer. He'd either yell out, "Cut the bullshit," or he'd say, "I'm glad you're here." And it was always such an honor to have Ami on my side. That's why it hit me like a Mack truck when I found out that he died. Yeah, it hit me like a Mack truck when I found out that he died. Then enter Alex, 33 years old, and so sick with the cancer and trapped inside a body that betrayed his real gender. We all hoped and prayed that he would go into remission at least long enough, just long enough to complete his transition. He said, "Kimya, did you know 11teen's my favorite song?" I said, "Then get your ass on stage right now and you can sing along." That's the very first song I ever wrote all by myself. It's about angels and recovery and friends and hope and health. By the time we finished singing, he was pissed off, he was scared. He said, "I lost my home, my lover, my insurance, and my hair. And now I'm about to lose you to my new friend." I looked into those big blue eyes and said, "We'll meet again." Yeah, I looked into his sad blue eyes and said, "We'll meet again." Then I got the phone call from Alyssa, and she told me he was dying. By the time I got to his bedside, we were both already flying. We held hands and we sang songs, tried to be strong, floated around while I cursed the skin that he was in for all the ways it had let him down. Yeah, I cursed the skin that he was in for all the ways it had let him. Taking my own body for granted. First I lost sight of my feet, then they became unplanted. And I never felt so stupid or so selfish or so sad. Yeah, my body had been good to me and I treated it so bad. Yeah, my body had been good to me and I treated it so bad. Then he said, "Mama, I don't want my friends to watch me die." So I kissed his cheek, made him a shirt, and then I said goodbye. And they cremated him in the shirt that I drew of the two of us that said, "They're flying over."
bottleneck into the fold. On a Mars Black Sabbath, news from the Ministry of Make-Believe would reach the tarmac in Minneapolis. Middle seat, yesterday the cells inside his chest were growing baby teeth. Today a raven radiated vacancy. Wait, 2 years ago, a friend of mine called me to redefine all enemy kind. I'm at the hospital at 24 and no one knew the future. I take it everybody knows the future. Antibodies hatching in a hell of back with no room to maneuver. Like disappearing pills into the masticated fuchsia. I asked you how you feeling, you told me like a robot. I gave you a Nintendo, you gave yourself a mohawk. They let us wheel you down beneath the Leaning Tower flowcharts. To be around your beats without a beeping sound of Bogart. Speak about whatever people speak about when nobody's acknowledging the obvious disease about the crowbar. In deep plane slow, comatose and baggage. From King of Hearts to carrying for jackals. And never got to sing us all his own swamp song right. Coincidentally, the rebel let me walk like thunder.
Walk like thunder.
That tune was called Walk Like Thunder. That was by Kimya Dawson, who at least used to live in Olympia, though I have not seen her around in several years now that I think about it. But I just heard her on Rising Up with Sonali with Sonali Kolhatkar. So I know she is still around somewhere making music, which is a good thing. And KHUH and Pro listeners, I'll play some more Kimya again for you in the bonus 6 minutes that you guys get every week. And otherwise, that's it for the show this week. We'll see you next week. Peace.
The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com. And we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day.
And you may want to grab a pen or something because I'm about to give you some information. If you like what you hear here on the Thunderbolt, then the Thunderbolt archives are stored at dana98501.wordpress.com. That's DANA98501, which is the downtown Olympia zip code, .wordpress.com. And if you would like to continue hearing the Thunderbolt, you can contribute to our cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. And
thank you very much.